broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, Happy Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Let's start the week by going up front to get the latest on Wisconsin politics statewide with Channel 12 political director Matt Smith on Point Taken.
And good morning. Look who's back!
I'm back.
Yes, she's back after like 16 weeks off in a row.
I got multiple emails asking when I was coming back.
Did you?
It's insufferable without me.
I didn't get many that said, where's Kristen's? But we did make a big point of saying that on the Extra Points newsletter.
Oh, no, yeah, it was the headline.
Yeah. Because people do ask. Matt Smith.
She's back.
She is back. Ready to just hit hard on politics and everything else that we talk about on Point Taken. Matt Smith.
Good morning.
Political director of Channel 12, Station of the Year. By the way, from the Wisconsin Broadcast.
Congratulations.
Very nice.
You as well.
Yeah, we both won Podcast of the Year.
And congratulations.
Kristen, digital, not a surprise, not an upset, Digital Creator of the Year. That's a,
congratulations.
That's a slam dunk.
Thank you.
Slam dunk.
Two years in a row. Look at that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's pretty obvious. Pretty talented in that area. Want to just talk about that for 5 minutes?
No. I want to talk about the news.
Good thing the big race is coming with that, right?
I've been itching. What'd you say?
It's a good thing the big race is coming alongside that.
Yeah, exactly. I've been pent up.
We're going to give you an opportunity. This, matter of fact, I'm going to let you kind of, because this is your hour to like get back into it.
Okay.
Fire.
All right. Matt Smith.
Hi.
We had former Governor Scott Walker on. What was the cause to bring him on?
So we initially wanted him after the spring election results. He's still heavily involved in Republican politics. He knows Republican politics inside and out. He's a national voice. He leads Young America's Foundation. And it just worked scheduling-wise in terms of getting him in the studio. And it worked out well just in terms of timing. So some things, as you guys know, it all comes down to scheduling,
absolutely,
right? And people's schedules. And when someone is available, you make room for it.
Because he splits time now between here and California, right?
Yes, and Washington, where Young America's Foundation in Virginia, I guess, technically, is headquartered. But the Reagan Ranch, in California as well.
How is the governor?
He's good. Yeah. I mean, I think he is good where he's at in his spot, right? I think he is still really in tune with what's happening in the state. He's talking with people. People talk to him. People still seek him out for advice and counsel on Republican movements, conservative movements, young voter movements. So he kind of has the pulse of what's happening.
So this was what was interesting as far as the conversation you had with him. So I, part of the reason I was gone last week is I'm filming a documentary about how polarization's impacting Gen Z youth raised in Wisconsin. And as the leader of the Young American Foundation, that is a big part of his job now, is talking to young people. And I thought his response on which way young voters will swing in the midterms was shockingly honest. And so can we play that one, Jazz?
Is there a scenario where there could be some conservative or moderate young voters who may be kind of sick of everyone and see a Francesca Hong in the race for governor and somehow be attracted to what is kind of an unconventional campaign?
Absolutely. Young voters, like swing voters here in Wisconsin, I was just saying this the other day on CNN, are a wild card. What they appreciate, regardless of party more than anything, is authenticity and fairness. That's why I think on the left and on the right, to young people, you can find candidates that may seem like they're contradictory, but who have passion, who are pumped up. I think Representative Hong affects that. I think part of what I hope to see more of from Tom Tiffany is that same sort of passion with his plan.
Because he also said something that he's feeling like there's a growing group who are more moderate.
Yeah.
That they see the fringe or the radical on the left or the right of their peer group. And they're kind of like, well, I'm not that. And I would say that is similar to what I'm hearing in the conversations I'm having with young people.
In their surveys, he said the highest response right now is moderate. It's not liberal. It's not conservative. It's this middle ground where either it's kind of unknown or there's just, you don't necessarily like anyone.
Oh, yeah, and there's a rejection of both parties of like, I don't like the system that we're in.
Yeah, I think that's an acknowledgement of what people are thinking. But from a guy who's branded as the Wisconsin conservative and was a conservative governor for the time he was in office, that is somewhat surprising, no?
Yeah, I mean, and you heard him say, I would like to see more of, from Tom Tiffany, in terms of underscoring the challenge that Republicans know that they're going to have headed into the midterms.
Yeah, because does Tom Tiffany speak to the youths, you think?
I would say generally no. But as we just learned from Governor Scott Walker, that's a pretty important piece of this puzzle when it comes to winning an election. And if you look at statewide elections, Republicans have had a real trouble getting to the finish line.
So. And the question is, what other Democratic candidates will meet that mold, right?
Who's going to start running some ads?
Yeah.
The ad wars, right?
The ad wars.
So Pecky had a great point about that on Friday. What are you waiting for?
I know.
There's so many candidates on the one side. Someone's got to have to, like, launch their, otherwise it's too late. You have all this, you may have money down the road. Your campaign's over. What the hell are you waiting for?
Well, especially when you have Tom Tiffany up on TV, who will now be able to define himself for however long he wants to until a Democrat gets in the race, in the TV ads, not in the race, get on TV to either try to define themselves or define him.
Absolutely.
All right, lots more Matt Smith. Kristen is back, baby. Not you, baby, but generally, baby. It was like a just win, baby kind of a comment. You know what I'm saying?
I got it.
It's good to have you back, though, just the back and forth. Because when you're sitting here by yourself, you can go a little stir crazy, as you probably know.
As I heard.
Yeah. Oh, that's a biting commentary that
but
I was
there.
All right, we'll take a quick break here on Point Taken on this Monday on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen, back from a week. Let's say I was off, but I was working. Steve Scafidi.
You
Matt
work
Smith.
Harder than most people.
A working week.
It was a working week, absolutely. It was the busiest. I think it was the busiest week of the year so far.
And
for
just,
me.
Just before you get launched into the next conversation, here, welcome back, Kristen. The show is much better when you are on. So I see, I read the stuff that's like shots at me, although it is pretty good when she's on.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
All right, so continuing the conversation when you had former Governor Scott Walker on the show this weekend, talking a little bit about gas prices and what that will do to the election this fall.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think Republicans will willingly acknowledge they're not in a good spot right now. I mean, redistricting stuff aside, right? Like, that's a whole nother conversation. But just the makeup of politics, the polling, where the president is at, where the economy is at, where gas prices are at, there is some concern as we now head into the summer.
Yeah, McCaution said on Friday they got to get this fixed, otherwise it's disastrous for their outlook. Let's hear the clip.
It's really simple sometimes for voters right now, right? When they go to the gas pump, gas is now over $4 a gallon. That's not good for Republicans, is it?
No, and part of it is, I mean, it was $5 in the middle of Joe Biden's. I got a picture of it at the near our home in Pewaukee and when it was over that amount. But I think you're right. The closer we get to the end of the summer, as you head into Labor Day, that's when really people look at gas prices, food prices. If they're renting or they're paying a mortgage or looking for a home, particularly for a lot of young people I talk to, you know, they don't see a home purchase anywhere in the horizon for them. Those are the sorts of things that not only have to change, but particularly for Tiffany and for the other candidates on the Democrat side, is they've got to talk about real, real solutions.
All right. First, before we get into what he said, did he just admit that he has a framed picture of the gas prices during Biden's
I think on his phone.
Administration? On his phone. Because he said it at his house in Pewaukee. I was like, where is this picture?
Yeah. I think he was referencing it was $5 in Pewaukee.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. On his phone. And I mean, like, and to the point of Republicans' argument, is that going to work? I don't know.
It
Looking
sucked then,
back.
It sucks now. It's, I mean, yeah. And this president, by the way, I don't know if Biden's energy policy, a lot of people think was confused and not clear enough to make sure that prices came down.
Yeah.
But this president said gas would be under $2 a gallon. I can pull the clip.
Yeah.
So this president is failing on that issue, and it's as uncomfortable as it is for Republicans, gas and groceries, all we heard about during the campaign. Well, you're failing. I'll give you a quick story. I was at the grocery store. One of the rare times I ever go to the grocery store.
You never go.
Buying some turkey hot dogs. Okay.
Specific.
Do you know how much a package of turkey hot dogs costs? $5.
Oh, that's less than I thought it would be.
That's way more. I thought like $2.
That was gonna be like $8.
No.
I think you also aren't a good litmus test for grocery prices because you don't normally grocery shop.
$2. $2.49 I was expecting.
How much would you think milk is?
We bought milk, but I don't remember what it was. That's too much too.
This is not the guy you want to price right.
Gas and groceries.
Anyways, anything else that you stood out to you with the former governor?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's just interesting as we sit here now, as we approach the summer, how all of this is going to shake out, how it's going to shake out on the campaign trail, and how everyone's going to respond.
Did he acknowledge that if you look at polling numbers,
yeah,
young people, minority voters, I mean, almost pick a demographic. They're all moving away from Republicans. Did he acknowledge that reality Is the gas and groceries the only thing they have to fix to get that back?
Yeah, I mean, in the extent of look at the timestamp we're in, right? Like when the Republican is in the White House, it's going to favor Democrats in the midterms. I think they're looking short term. But yeah, there are long term questions that clearly need to be answered, especially when you look at the state, right? And the way the map is or isn't shifting in some of these counties and what it looks like across the board.
All right.
All right, we'll take a break.
Yeah, we have not one, but two judges who have already announced for next year's Supreme Court election, and up front had both of them. So we'll talk about that after this.
Hey, Matt, did you know we have a Supreme Court election?
I've heard.
You had a couple candidates on, Pedro Colon and Judge Lindsay Brunette.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, this was the framework they took last year with Chris Taylor, right? You announce almost literally like just after the election, almost a year in advance. But now we have two liberal-backed candidates who are jumping in the race. Judge Pedro Colon already has the endorsement of Justice-elect Chris Taylor.
Is that strange?
I don't I mean,
because I've heard that they've worked together in the past, but she hasn't even been.
He was
sworn
a former Democratic state lawmaker.
So I just saw some people were like, "Oh, this is inappropriate," but like, is it?
Well, the liberal justices have been endorsing, but they did not join this, so it wasn't all of them. So maybe they'll sit this out if there are two candidates that go all the way to the primary. We'll have to see. I think everything with the state Supreme Court election is kind of uncharted territory now, right? Every election is just a little different than what it used to be.
Well, plus now they're not game changers.
Yeah.
Given the makeup, so that's not going to change anything.
Right.
Have you heard any win, talking
yeah,
about...
Yeah, I think conservatives will put up a... Is that what... I'm sure that's...
Yeah,
I think conservatives will put up a candidate.
People talking about who the conservative candidate could be.
Yeah, and like... Yes, so I think there will be. So if there are three or more candidates, there will be a primary. And since it is technically nonpartisan, it's just the top two winners will move on. So in theory, you could have a scenario where it could be two liberal candidates or two conservative candidates just based on how many people get in the race since it is still nonpartisan. Yeah.
Lots of time before that race kicks into gear. You also had a security expert on, Brian Doro. I've interviewed him before. Smart guy, sharp guy on the threats against electeds and political figures in general. It is sort of uncharted territory in that direction, and it's not a good picture.
Yeah, he ran security for the RNC. He's a former Homeland Security official now, owns a private security company, and he works with a number of lawmakers. And we talked to him coming off the D.C. shooting and just his thoughts on that first and foremost. And then just the climate we're in, moving into election season ahead of the midterms. And a lot of these threats, like, we don't hear about, right? Like yes, the high-profile ones and when it gets to that level. But there's a lot of things that the public just doesn't know that is going on underneath the surface when you talk about any elected official.
I think we got a short clip from Brian Doro.
What is the security threat level for political events, especially as we look ahead, not only the midterms this fall, but the presidential election in 2028 as well?
It's high. And here's, I can give you examples. We do protect various politicians, and the threats they get nowadays are unbelievable. You know, deliberative threats. It's not in the past where, you know, I was unhappy that you signed this, but I can overcome it. Please consider, you know, voting a different way. It's like, no, I am coming to your house.
It's interesting that, I mean, he's highlighting something that a lot of us have been talking about. I got an email last week. Somebody said, do you realize the president of the United States been, you know, essentially had three different instances in his, you know, short time since he was running and in his second term? That's a lot of opportunity to take out a president of the United States. And that's not even mentioning all the threats against federal judges and who many of these people now have to, in some cases, pay for their own security at their home.
Well, and that was what I was going to ask as far as what, for a private security firm like his, how do they decide who they take on? Is it ever a government contract versus a private contract from an individual elected? Did you get into like how they choose who they're working with?
I mean, not super detailed like that, but some of it is different scenarios, right? Like a campaign can pay for security if you're doing campaign events and that comes from a campaign account. There are instances where, like, talking about members of Congress, right? There is money set aside, and there's always this discussion. at the state level, we talk about coming to your home. We look at what happened in Minnesota with the two Democratic state lawmakers. There's always these discussions about whether it be the state level or the federal level. Do we need to allocate more taxpayer money to go specifically towards security, or does that have to come from someplace else?
All right, we got about a minute and a half left. This week, what are you looking forward to covering?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Kirk Bankstead, who just announced he's running.
We're
going
to get to him.
Yeah, I'm assuming that you would have some thoughts. It's going to be curious to see what, if anything, that does to the Democratic primary. He has filed. He has to collect the signatures.
Do you take him any more seriously than you take Brett Halsey and Zach Roper?
Well,
I think he has like 200,000 people who are on his Facebook page, but that's national. Because I think he is the quintessential blue MAGA guy.
And that's one aspect of it, right? Like at this point, notoriety, and then you look at fundraising numbers, right? And you then there will be polling numbers. So like all of that will have to come together. But at the same time, not everyone has a visit by the FBI and the Secret Service 2 days before you announce you're running for governor, right? Like, it's an unusual situation just in terms of a candidate. But he is entering the Democratic primary, he says, for governor. And the candidates are going to have to address it if he becomes any type of serious contender.
So will you try to get him on the show for this next week?
Sure. Why not?
Okay.
Does that mean you have to drive it to Monacqua or he comes?
I hear it's lovely this time of year.
It's going to be pretty soon.
Yeah. No, listen, I mean, we want to talk to all the candidates, right? Yeah. And we have talked to all the candidates. And I'll get blasted all the time for who I bring on and who I don't bring on. I don't think there's a negative to hearing from people, whether you agree or disagree. Isn't that kind of what we're supposed to do?
No, for sure. But it's just, have you had Brett and Zach on?
No. Yeah.
All right. Opportunity.
Ready Maybe all go. Three of them could do it together.
He is
do
Matt
you want
Smith.
To come yes. host that interview?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
He is
Deal.
Political director at Channel 12. He's got to get out of here. All right, she is back. She being Kristen Bry. And we were talking about earlier in the show that she takes vacations to work, essentially, which is an interesting concept. I know you got some vacation time in, which is
great. I did. So we went to Nashville.
Which is an awesome place.
Which was very fun. Although, a stark reminder of, because especially bouncing around during the day, like, oh, there's a lot of bachelorette parties that are.
Yeah, it's a big place. It's Vegas.
Big bars, too. All those bars on Broadway are like four levels, huge, and all packed.
They're designed for partying.
So Nashville was very fun. It was a fun weekend with friends. And then.
Tick off some of the things you did away from the show. So people ask me, and I go, she's just on assignment.
So on Wednesday of last week, I filmed at Middleton High School for the documentary. Then from there, I left and moderated the Electing Women Forum with the four female gubernatorial candidates.
And how did that go?
That went great. It was really great. Yeah. I prepped a lot for that.
No media for that, though, right?
I was the only media invited.
Yeah, so you were the moderator.
Yes. And then slept in Madison. Next day, filmed at my alma mater, Madison West High School. Then came home, and then Friday morning, I gave a speech at the Wisconsin Child Care Administrators Association annual conference about a working parent's point of view of what child care means to me.
What was your big point from that speech?
That child care is, in my perspective and my experience, child care is more than just me having a place so I can go do my job. Like, child care to me is like a partnership in raising my child, and that there are things that I believe genuinely that my kid is flourishing because she's in the school that she's at more than she would be if I was home with her every day.
Okay.
And so it was like about partnership and how we should invest as much funding, like as much about funding as it is culturally changing how we think about childcare, that it is more than babysitting. It is human development.
Yeah. And two of my grandkids are in preschool and, you know, daycare, and man, they learn a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Sharp as a tack.
But then because I'm a procrastinator, I hadn't started any of those things. So that's why I took off Monday and Tuesday, so I could write my speech, write my questions, get organized for the documentary.
Yeah.
So it was a very emotionally fulfilling week.
That's
I will say that.
That's the best. If you're going to take some time
it was very good. I was busy. But the thing is, because I was so busy, I felt like I was a normal or your average news consumer.
Yeah.
because I was getting some of the headlines, but I didn't have any of the time to actually go in depth. And so we'll see how prepared I am for the.
So I thought, since I got to talk about whatever I wanted to talk about last year, I thought I'd give you at least a half hour of this show, and we could talk about more stuff during the rest of the week. I'm going to give you the choices, and you kind of start where you want. Shutdown ends, war in Iran continues, redistricting gone wild, the Louisiana decision, which the Voting Rights Act could be impaled because of, at least curtailed, and Kirk Bankstead getting into the race. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with Kirk, because I saw this. I'll just be honest about this. So as his, I'm sure you guys talked about a lot last week as far as.
That happened towards the end.
Who he is. No, it happened.
Thursday? Friday?
No, because it happened the same. The initial thing happened right after the attempt at the.
Yeah, he got in trouble.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what you're talking
so,
about.
So, like, if people are getting up to speed. So, basically, Kirk Bankstead, owner of Minocqua Brewing Company, or as I like to call him, the left's version of the MyPillow guy.
Yeah. Mike Lindell.
And so he wrote an obscene thing on the day after the White House Correspondents' Dinner. About the free beer day.
Yeah.
So then from
hashtag
there,
free beer day.
I saw him kind of lashing out at different, including Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, but lashing out to any journalist who asked him for comment about it. Obviously, there was a lot of social media reaction to it. He just kept digging in, like, no apology, just doubling down. I guess the Secret Service came to his house at some point over the last couple days.
Yes, he admitted
and now
that.
He is announced for governor.
Mm-hmm. That's the part I was talking about.
And I say this as someone who, back in 2021, when I was first, it was coming off of the election year, I didn't have this job yet. I didn't have my job at Journal Sentinel. I was trying to figure out what I was doing after the election and had started a podcast with him and Pat Kreitlow, who was at Up North News at the time. And for about, I think we did like 15 episodes. And so I got to know Kirk a little bit. And this was before I would say he went off the deep end. He was still a little intense for me, and I was just the show that we were doing. I was kind of like it was more of a pile on.
What was the format? Were you on?
It was all remote. Like he was at his house, okay. Pat was up in Chippewa Falls, and I was in Milwaukee. And it just wasn't. I like this show, right? I like this show because we don't always agree. I think shows that where you kind of agree on all the things and it just becomes a pile on and just becomes making fun of people you don't agree with.
Echo chamber.
Yeah, I didn't like it. And so I stepped away from it. But so, you know, over the years, I've had people like come into my DMs whenever some issue with him has erupted of like, oh, you should make a video about this. You should make a video about this. And I always politely said, I know, Kirk, I'm good. Because he gives people, like, he is the example of what the right stereotypes about radical leftists, right?
Where yeah, pretty it's much. Just,
and like, he's gone after Fran Hong and Mandela. Like, he's just, and to me, it's so much about publicizing his beer company.
Well, there's some people away from the show that tell me he's just doing this to raise money for his.
And I don't know what his motivations are, but like I will gladly distance myself from him and any snapshot of me when I did that podcast 5 years ago with him because he is embarrassing.
Okay, so to wrap this part before we get to something else after the break, what does he do to this race, if anything?
See, that's what I don't know because he does have about 200,000 followers on his Facebook page, but I don't know how much of that is a national following versus. In Wisconsin. Like, I think he's made a fair amount of enemies in Wisconsin. And I say this not even in the fights that he's had in Minocqua, but I remember a Reddit thread even when he was in Madison trying to get a new brick and mortar store. Like, I forgot if it was a brewery or what exactly it was, but in a neighborhood and left Madison in that neighborhood was like, it's not zoned for this. And there was a whole fight over where he was trying to set up shop there. And so I think. The more people who actually like come in contact with him versus the idea of him that is portrayed from, like I said, the blue MAGA people right. Who are just truly the TDS people.
Could he disrupt one of the other? Because, I mean, there's the margins are slim in this thing. There's basically Barnes and Hong right now early. Could he disrupt one of their candidacies? Because once you start throwing more people into this thing, it gets a little crazy.
I don't know. I mean, let's get to June. As far as the signatures, because I'll say this, what was interesting on Wednesday night when we were at this Electing Women event is when you were signing someone's papers, to get on the nomination. You can only sign one candidate's papers.
Correct.
Right?
That's the law.
And it's not your vote. You're not voting for them.
You don't have to vote for
that
person.
But a lot of people are running into struggling because there's so many people who don't know who they're voting for yet.
Is it 2,000?
They don't. It's 2,500.
Yeah, 2,500.
But it's statewide. Yeah. Unlike when you were running for mayor and you needed 2,500 that just live in the city of Milwaukee, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Any other questions about that?
No, I think we exhausted the Kirk Bankston. Okay. I'd like to, just my opinion, I'm not a Democrat, I'd like him to go away.
I would also like him to go away.
I think he's not good for anything, really.
I agree.
And it'd be interesting to see if there's any kind of a debate where he's part of it. You talk about being a disruptor, he would be that factor. And I don't think anybody gets the stink of that off them if they're standing there up there with that guy. That's how disruptive he is. Quick break. More Kristen this half hour. It is Monday on Point Taken, and we are all back together. The team is the trio. Jazz, Kristen, and Steve are all back together with awards in our hands.
I know.
And thanks to WBA. They put on a great event. We weren't at the event, but we can hold them up. If you don't know, we won Best Podcast, You Need to Listen, which is now branded Overtime, but we share it on the You Need to Listen podcast page. And then, no surprise, I said at the beginning, there's no one better in digital creation on radio, because you won it 2 years in a row, right? Mm-hmm. It ain't even close. So that's a slam dunk. I don't know who finished second?
No.
Don't drop your award.
I didn't ask.
So congrats to us and the station of the year, news operation of the year.
Got a lot of awards upstairs.
Yeah, because we do real work. Not fake work, not partisan talking points, but actually journalism happens here, which I want to talk about this week because I had a great interview with a Ukrainian journalist.
I heard that.
Unbelievable. Blew me away. And before we jump back into these news stories, I like to listen back because when you're doing an interview, you're sort of focused on, you want to listen as intently, but when you have specific, I had a real short amount of time, mm-hmm. you're focused on that, the delivery, all that stuff. I didn't pick up the emotion in her voice, which is basically talking about life or death. Oh, and then, oh, by the way, you're a journalist.
Yeah.
It just blew me away. So you can check it out on our newsletter, which we'll tell you about in a little bit. All right, so we had the redistricting case. Louisiana.
That was one that I feel like I didn't get impacted. To emotionally digest because it was that came out in the middle of the craziness of the week. But I mean, it's a new world now, right? As far as what can happen with redistricting lines. And I understand from the argument of, what I was reading, comparing opinions on this. And, from the side of it guarantees that there's no obstruction to individuals voting. It shouldn't necessarily guarantee them the right to have election results. And I get that, but I feel like the protections that were there, because if you think about the previous dismantling of the Voting Rights Act and Section 5 of that was supposed to protect against kind of the old games of the Jim Crow era.
Yeah.
And now, as soon as that was struck down, there's just new games, right? And the fact that they are moving voter polls, closing polls in black and brown communities, purging people. And like we can see in data how some of these liberties that states have now taken once different parts of the Voting Rights Act have been knocked down, and the impact it's had on minority communities. And I feel like this is just like on paper, you're like, yes, if everyone's working in good faith, I get it. We know by this year alone and everything that's happened with redistricting that these are not people who are acting in good faith as far as our democracy and letting the best candidates run and win. It's all about power and it's all about manipulating lines. And until we get to some kind of, like, I'm now feeling like I'm getting to, like, a proportional government. I don't know if we could ever get there. But as far as, like...
That's an interesting point, yeah.
Right? As far as...
That's the only way you can avoid this.
Instead of, like, screwing around with these lines and how they can be manipulated for the outcomes that people want and whoever's in power, having your state voted 60-40 statewide, you get, 4 and 3 or whatever the math is for how many congressional reps you get. I don't know how and if we would ever get there, but it just feels like this is not a representative way to run our government.
It's horrific, and it's the exact opposite, I think, of how our country should be set up. But both of the gentlemen on Friday, Bill and Joe, said it's nuclear war now, and states are just doing whatever they want. Florida's the latest example, I guess. They're gonna shift four districts. It's just ugly. And I think I said it to Joe after the show. You know, he laughed at me, of course. Here's an idea. We just take 50-50. Both sides get 50%. And then the decider is, if you have the White House, you're vice president.
You get 51?
Yeah, that's it. Actual work would get done because you have to find consensus. And then Joe just laughed at me, of course, because that's not realistic. Is this realistic? It's heinous. The rule, it's nuclear war. There's no rules, and I don't like it. This is supposed to be your half hour.
So. No, I know, but I think we're on the same page with this as it's not good.
All right, we got other stuff to talk about with Kristen. We'll do it after this. All right, got a couple minutes left. What do we got? We got war in Iran. Any thoughts about the war? I mean,
past
it sort
60
of trudges
days.
On. President basically said, or his representative said over the weekend, not asking permission.
Yeah, I mean, I know this is, we've said it from the beginning, but as far as the War Powers Resolution, and the reason why that's in place is so that a president can't just have the authority to put us in a forever war. Now, I don't think 60 days is a forever war, but still no input from Congress, still going on 2 months, still paying $450 to get all to Madison and Oshkosh and all the driving I just had
Could
to
go
do.
Higher. It's gone only up in the last 2 weeks.
I don't know. And it just feels like it's hard to get real information because I feel like every time there's an announcement of something, some movement, it's like, well, Iranian officials deny. And
who are we even talking to in Iran? Because we blew up like almost everyone that mattered. So there's some new group that apparently they can't even figure out who these people are. And we're sending, what, J.D. Vance? And I don't even know if Marco Rubio's been there. And by the way, he's the Secretary of State and probably one of the most respected members of this administration. Why isn't he more involved?
Well, he's got a lot of jobs right now.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, as the memes point out.
As the memes point out.
He does everything.
He's got a lot of jobs.
In full costume, which I appreciate. So keep those memes coming. All right, after the break, Annex Wealth Management. Third week in a row, Dr. Brian Jacobson joins us, Chief Economic Strategist. Lots of stuff to talk about. We'll do it after this on Point Take.
The work week is here. Let's begin with your Monday market preview with Annex Wealth Management Chief Economic Strategist, Dr. Brian Jacobson on Point Taken.
All right. We are trying to get Brian Jacobson. We're efforting. We're efforting to get Brian Jacobson's mic ready to go. All right. We're good. Right. Brian Jacobson, are you there?
I am. No video, unfortunately,
That's
this time,
fine.
Though.
That's fine. We know what you look like.
Too bad. You're a good-looking man there, Brian. So, but we're going to tap into your knowledge, your financial, your expertise, your chief economist strategist expertise for the program today. Sort of a wild ride for the markets.
Yeah. What is going on? It feels like it's been like going up despite the war. So what are you looking at right now and what's causing it?
Yeah, so today it's really interesting watching the market action, because over the weekend we did hear from President Trump that he wants to have this, is it called Project Freedom now, as far as the way in which the United States might assist some of those vessels to get out of the Persian Gulf through the Strait of Hormuz. Seems like the market has a little bit of skepticism as to how long that might take. Plus, there have been some reports about are the Iranians really going to cooperate? Are they going to launch some missiles? There was some misinformation out earlier about an attack. So I think that the market is just right now kind of waiting to see, is it going to get worse before it starts to get better?
Some of the numbers, the core PCE, what is that, Brian? PCE.
Yeah, so the PCE stands for Personal Consumption Expenditures.
Okay.
So a little bit of a mouthful. It's a broad measure of consumer spending on goods and services across the economy.
All right, so it's I guess the Fed prefers that as a measure of inflation. It's pushing a 12-month inflation rate to 3.2%. So how does that jive with where we want to be?
It's going the wrong way, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully that will reverse course based upon what Chair Powell, so outgoing Chair Powell, has said. He does expect that the inflationary effect from tariffs is likely to be peaking around about now. And so as a result, some of this leftover inflationary impulse is mostly coming from energy and not necessarily so much from tariffs anymore. It was fascinating to listen to Chair Powell at the beginning of his press conference when he said that, look, we have a problem with inflation. And it is from core goods. So core just means excluding the food and energy part, because those are up and down and all around, kind of what's the signal and the noise. He said for core goods, the turn towards higher inflation came from mostly tariffs. But yet at the same time, when it comes to like services, right, think about like insurance, educational costs, the different things like that. So not tangible. You get your hair cut. That's a service. It's not a good, right? So that's the area where we have had inflation, but it seems to be getting a little bit more tame. So you have these two forces at work. You have core goods inflation moving up, but then you have the services inflation that's beginning to moderate. But unfortunately, the dominant thing right now in the near term is that core goods part. And now, all of a sudden, with throwing a spanner in the works with the high energy prices, we're probably going to have to wait until, you know, September to see inflation really get a little bit more on track towards the Fed's 2% target.
And as we've known that, where are we right now in the Kevin Warsh confirmation? I know that he testified. I know that Tom Tillis pulled off and said that he will let it go through because they dropped the investigation against Powell. But so where are we in the timeline for that transition to take place?
Yeah, so there's two transitions to take place here. One is for the chair of the Federal Reserve, and so that's for Kevin Warsh. He's going to become a governor and then also the chair. That has gone out of the Senate Banking Committee, so it has cleared that procedural hurdle. The next step is to go to the full Senate for a vote, and that should be pretty much like a rubber stamp. I mean, I would expect that could easily get done without a lot of fanfare, even within a week or so. I mean, technically, I think they're out for the week. But before the next Fed meeting, or actually before Chair Powell's term as chair is up May 15th, Warsh should be able to sit in that seat. But then there's the part about Chair Powell being a governor on the board of governors there. That term isn't up until January 2028. And he said he's going to stick around, try to keep a low profile until this investigation, originally it was from the Department of Justice, now it got punted over to the Inspector General at the Federal Reserve about all the cost overruns for the renovation project. Chair Powell said he wants to stick around until that is completely done.
Got it. Okay. So with Warsh taking up that new seat, do you expect that to change anything when it comes to inflation or interest rates?
Well, it could. You know, that's the interesting thing. So Kevin Warsh thinks that the Fed has been droning on too much about what they think will happen, what they think, you know, their different views, the disparate views of all the members around the table, that there's almost too much transparency. And so he's saying how he might want to dial that back a little bit. And that could be a good thing in the long term. But oftentimes markets prefer more transparency as opposed to less, because if the Fed isn't going to communicate as much, it means that those policy meetings, you could get more surprises there. And as a result, you could actually get more bond market volatility as far as how we see those interest rates and yields moving up and down. So it could introduce a little bit more volatility there. That's kind of what we're bracing for, but that's likely going to be a project that is like at least a year in the working, because they do have their current operating procedure in place as far as the number of press conferences they have, the way in which they communicate with the public. That's the type of thing that only changes typically every January. And so I wouldn't expect it to have any immediate effect, but it could have a longer term effect.
All right, let's take a break really quickly, and we'll come back with more with Chief Economist at Annex Wealth Management, Brian Jacobson. You're listening to Point Taken.
Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economic Strategist at Annex Wealth Management, annexwealth.com. Click the Get Started button. I never look back, and you won't either. All right, so real quick, couple quick hitters here. One, we're going to get to Spirit Airlines in a second, but tech companies' earnings reports look great. What's driving the momentum there, Brian?
Yeah, so right now, a lot of the momentum is just coming from really the classic way in which they made money. They're not seeing a huge return on investment yet for all the data center build out. If you think about it, you can use like ChatGPT and Google Gemini without many fees. Some
companies are paying for it, Brian. So I mean, they're making some money.
Yeah, some companies are paying for it. I think Microsoft announced that only about 3% of users are actually paying for it. And so that number could grow. So most of the money, the earnings, is still from the cash cow of their previous business. If it's with Google, it's because of ad revenue. Same thing with Meta. For Microsoft, it's subscription with Windows and all those other applications. So they haven't really seen a massive payoff yet, but it seems to be in the pipeline.
All right, so let's get to the big news over the weekend as far as Spirit Airlines has shut down. Was this something that anyone, I didn't think it was coming, but I guess I learned that when you're a discount airline, you work on such ridiculously small margins that gas prices just put them out of business. And so what do you read into that, and how is it going to affect the airline industry?
Yeah, that's a perfect diagnosis of what happened, right? It's very thin margins, very competitive. And so suddenly you get a shock with huge increase in jet fuel prices. And all of a sudden, they're no longer financially viable. And it does mean that there's a little bit less competition in the airline space. It is this market structure where you have some big dominant players, but you do have some of these discount airlines where now all of a sudden, if you take one of them out, doesn't mean there's a little bit less competition, a little bit less pricing discipline on everybody else there. Now, Spirit, I believe, only had about like 3.4% of the market share. So it wasn't a huge player, but it wasn't insignificant, especially in certain markets. And I think that's where you will see the effects is where is it that Spirit was actually operating out of, which routes, which gates. And those are probably the areas to be on the lookout for. Are there suddenly going to be, you know, some people hiking their airfares now as a result of it?
What is about the other parts of the economy as far as how many people are now out of a job? Also, like the local airports that did have Spirit flying in and out of their airports. Like, what is the other externalities of this that impact the economy?
Yeah, the people who are stranded, right? I mean, I read some of the stories about people who suddenly Spirit Airlines, they go out of business and they can't operate anymore. And as somebody who owns a ticket on that, you will likely get your money back. It remains to be seen. But what a lot of other airlines did is they stepped in and said, we will provide transportation. So suddenly you have all this disruption. It's almost like during the period with the TSA agents when they weren't showing up and so because they weren't being paid. And you had all those flight delays. So this really affected certain individuals, really disrupted their plans. That's probably the biggest area where you're seeing the effects.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Brian. Wasn't it like a year or two ago that they proposed a merger with, was it JetBlue, and the government shot it down?
That's right. And a lot of people are saying, you know, if you went to shot that down, they might have been more financially viable.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because it is a scale business. Think about the, you need the routes, the amount of fixed investment that it takes in order to operate these things. Plus, it's a little bit more diversified business model. And so perhaps it was the overregulation that actually caused or contributed to the bankruptcy. I think the exact trigger was probably the increase in jet fuel costs. This was something that we actually kind of saw come in from almost a mile away.
And bottom line for consumers, we're just talking about prices going up. This doesn't help that equation.
It doesn't help, but it might not hurt a lot just because there is still some competition out there. You know, Delta competes with United, competes with American, competes with Frontier, competes with Southwest, right? So there are still a lot of competitors out there, but it doesn't really help, especially when we have seen one of the big drivers of transportation cost increases has been with airlines increasing their fares.
All right. I have to ask because my husband follows GameStop stock very closely. He was very excited Friday night because there was an announcement that GameStop has the stocks and the cash, apparently, to buy eBay. And he's like, I don't think they're... His theory is they're not actually buying eBay. He thinks they're going to merge some, like, the collectibles part of eBay with PSA and do a whole new thing. But what is your read on GameStop these days, Brian?
That was interesting. I think that they are making a good use of the big run-up that they had with their stock, the meme stock mania.
Yeah.
You know, they may as well make some money on it. And one of the ways that you can do that, your stock price goes up. You can use that as a type of currency. You can raise cash. They've raised debt in order to do some of these acquisitions to actually extend their longevity. If you think about what their classic business model was, it maybe allows them to extend into a different area. I think I would agree with your husband as far as the business model is they can merge certain parts of it. If all of a sudden eBay had more of a physical presence, an area where you can actually go to pick up the products, it'll be interesting to see exactly what comes of this. Still, it's a developing story, but it is fascinating to see how they're trying to make good with, make hay while the sun is shining, and that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economic Strategist, got a point to a fun event. I think it's fun. Wednesday, May 6th, that's Wednesday, 6 p.m. to 7:30 in the show to Red Circle Inn, the Provimi Salon, Watertown Plank Road. It's about preserving the stories behind your treasures, assets, legacy. I love this sort of this idea, and you're going to tell people about, you know, whether it's jewelry, wine, sports card collections, which Chris's husband knows very well, art, heirlooms. That's a big part of assets as well. You can go to the events page on annexwealth.com and find out more about that one. That would be a fun one.
Well, we're really looking forward to that. Great conversations. I mean, just think about all the different collectibles that you have and the family heirlooms and the importance of the stories behind there. Right. Just think about it. Like historically, there's all these different mementos, but really what's valuable is the story behind it, the history. And so a lot of this is about, you know, how to preserve that. Also, are you leaving a legacy or are you leaving a mess? Because there can be some things that, you know, you think are valuable, but maybe there's not like a huge market value for that. So how can you really kind of sift through that as far as what might be valuable, what might not be? And then also in terms of what is the value? Is it monetary or is it more in terms of the history and the story?
Sentimental value is typically not the
help
same
your kids
as
out.
Financial value.
That's right.
All right, Brian. Dr. Brian Jacobson, thanks as always. AnnexWealth.com is your great resource. Always available. Find it. Click on the Get Started button. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. Take care.
Welcome back, 1127 Point Taken. Kristen and Steve together again, reunited.
And it feels so good.
Peaches and Herb, I think, is the artist that recorded that song. That's my era, not your era, but you know the song.
Mm-hmm.
Reunited feels so good. All right,
but you managed to, because I usually am the one who puts the final detail on the newsletter as far as making sure things are hyperlinked, picking the pictures, and I contributed a little bit last week. But I'm very proud of you. You did it. And it got out on time, looked good.
Yeah. I mean, we're all getting... The only part we couldn't do is the part that you have total control over, which is the...
The survey.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it looked good.
Yeah. And there's a way you can get that newsletter.
By texting EXTRA to 855-616-1620. And not only that, but you can also see the most recent... All of them, actually. You can... If you text EXTRA to 855-616-1620... It'll take you to a landing page, and it has the last three or now four?
Four.
Last
and eventually
four
it'll have
newsletters.
Six on that page, right? The last six, I think.
Well, it'll just keep building, right? It'll just be the...
Oh.
They'll just, yeah, it's like, it basically is like a blog at that point, as far as being able to have the archive of each newsletter as a website. But why has the extra step? Just have it delivered to your inbox.
Yeah,
and
it's a cool mix of things that we love to ask and things that we involved in. I had my link to my great interview with the Ukrainian journalist who was fantastic. I just texted her this morning because I sent her a link to the interview. They're in San Francisco. This group of Eastern European journalists are traveling the country. I go, you still live there. Awesome place. And she sends me a picture of her on the ocean.
Oh, like, that's cool.
Isn't that wild? So I was telling you during one of the breaks, as soon as I heard there was a journalist from Ukraine, I go, I have to talk to that person. I have like a 5-minute window and I stretched it to like 8 or 9 because they had a busy schedule. They have to keep moving around. They had other trips they had to do that day. And I listened back to the interview and I heard the emotion that I didn't hear when I did the interview, because she basically said, you wake up with this reality. You hope to wake up one because you could get blown up in your sleep. And then you have a decision. Do you go to the shelter that they suggest you go to? Well, after day after day after day, you have to have a life. And you want to spend it in a bomb shelter. And the other choice is sort of a stark reality. You find the two strongest walls in your house or your building and you sleep between those on a cot. Or in her case, a sleeping bag. And then, oh, by the way, do your job. So anybody, I said it after I played it on Friday, we complain a lot in this country.
I was just thinking that exact
same thing. Oh, my God. It's not even close. My goodness.
And it reminds me of, you were gone, because obviously you were in Egypt. You were trying to find your way home. Of the interview I did with my brother when he was getting out of Dubai, you know, when this war was first started. And his realization of, you know, the fact that for a lot of people that are, we're so spoiled in this country to have these two big oceans separating us from most of the world, besides obviously our neighbors to the north and the south. And the reality for a lot of other countries is that this is a part of life, and there's a lot more violence and proximity to people who want to do harm than we have to deal with.
Yeah, so if you get a chance to subscribe to the newsletter, you can listen to that interview. Unless you're not driving, and I guess that's a win for you,
That was our survey question in our newsletter this week, is how are you reacting to the gas prices?
Here's the numbers. They're surging, and the last numbers I had, at least from my notes, were 439, but it's probably even higher than that. So let's get an expert on. So Angela Hanks, Chief of Policy Programs at the Century Foundation, formerly worked for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, joins us on the hotline. Happy Monday.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. So I guess for me, it's been a while since I've seen prices like this, and I'm seeing all over Twitter and social media, oh, you know, 4 years ago it was the... Give me a quick history lesson on where gas prices have been over the last, you know, few years.
Yeah, so why don't we start with where they were this time last year, which was in Wisconsin, under $3. So average price of gas, actually, even at the start of the war, was $2.73 in Wisconsin. Today, it's at $4.38. So my estimate is quite close to yours. But we've seen an incredible spike in just a short period of time. And when you look at gas prices a year ago and even a few years before that, you know, it's been a while since we've seen gas prices rise this high and this quickly. And the last time was spurred by Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022.
So... real quick, you know, the implication short term is we're all paying more for gas, which means affects our bottom line. But there's other implications. We were talking about the airline industry with our financial guest earlier. And even for the prices in general, this is all part of that same story, things going up.
Yes, that's right. I mean, of course, I think many of us are focused on gas because we see the prices every day when we go to fill up our tanks, when we try to get to work and or take our kids to school. But actually, the closure of the Strait of Hormuz caused by the Iran war has a widespread effect on all types of prices. So gas prices are one, diesel prices are another, which affects, of course, the entire transportation industry. And we're already seeing companies like UPS price that in for consumers, as well as Amazon. But we also have these sort of like, I think I would say like under expected effects of other materials not being able to get through the Strait of Hormuz. So in addition to things like transportation costs rising, getting something delivered to your door, booking an airline ticket. Of course, we saw Spirit close, and one of the reasons they cited is actually rising fuel prices in their closure documents. But there's always all these other effects. So, for example, helium is something that goes through the Strait of Hormuz. That's a critical component in semiconductor manufacturing. If you remember from the pandemic, semiconductors, a shortage of semiconductors was one of the reasons that we had things like rising auto prices, as we had shortages of vehicles. They're used in everything from AI to cars to dishwashers. And so you can really imagine as you start to see goods like that become less available, we could see some worrisome trends there. And then there are also things like fertilizer has been in the news quite a bit as another material that's been blocked. And you can imagine once you start having farmers who have less access to fertilizer, the war started before crop season or after crop season had really gone into effect for the spring. But the longer this goes on, the more uncertainty there is around will it affect farmers' ability to purchase fertilizer to grow crops. And then, of course, that has downstream effects on consumers as well at the grocery store.
Angela, you mentioned that the last time we saw prices like this, and they were even higher during when the Ukraine-Russian war first broke out, is... Are we expected for this to continue to get higher? Like, what were the inputs that led to the high prices in back in 2022, 2023, compared to the inputs that are leading to it now?
Yeah, so I would say a couple of things. One, when the gas prices spiked around Russia's war with Ukraine, of course, we know that, you know, we're now 4 years into this conflict. And so there was a big spike, and it also continued on for a very long period of time and took quite a long time for those initial supply shocks to abate. Here, we're only 2 months into the war with Iran, so it remains to be seen how long we'll be in it. But certainly, you can imagine the longer that we are engaged in this conflict, the longer that the strait is closed, the more concerning those effects would be. And then, you know, one of the things that is different from 4 years ago and now is a lot of the focus in the United States on producing and utilizing alternative energy sources have really stopped. You know, there were investments made under the Inflation Reduction Act that made energy prices more affordable for consumers. The Inflation Reduction Act was not in effect in 2022 when Russia attacked Ukraine. So some of those investments perhaps would have paid off in a crisis like this one, but because those have been rolled back by this administration, you know, we'll never know the answer to that. But it's likely that consumers are paying higher prices as a result.
Angela Hanks joining us, Chief of Policy Programs at the Century Foundation. Gas is interesting because it does go up and down its cycles, but a lot of things, they go up and they never, ever come back in prices. And you can think about all the consumer stuff we buy. I guess for me is, given where we're at now, other than energy policy, administration policy, the war in Iran, we have a refinery issue in Indiana that's affecting our prices here in Wisconsin. What's the next story here when it comes to gas prices? Do we expect it to keep going up? Do we expect it to level off or go down? What do you think?
I think it's hard to imagine that gas prices will go down so long as this conflict continues. I think that feels clear to me. I think the question is whether gas prices and other prices alongside it continue to rise. So, for example, one of the things we saw kind of quickly after the war began was that expectations around interest rates rising actually caused mortgage interest rates to rise pretty much immediately. You know, the Fed just met last week. They kept rates where they were. But you can imagine as this goes on, it's both that things like gas prices increase because very directly the supply constraints make that a reality. But also we see prices across the board continue to rise because either the Fed is not cutting rates or contemplating additional rate hikes. You know, we were in an environment even, you know, just a few months ago where the Fed was continuing along its path to cut rates, and all the uncertainty caused by this war has really made that difficult, if not impossible, for them to continue along that path.
All right. Angela Hanks is the Chief of Policy Programs at the Century Foundation and former Consumer Financial Protection Bureau official. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Kristen.
Absolutely. All right. We'll come back with more on Point Taken after this.
Here's to sweet summer days together with friends and family in Wisconsin. To discovering magic in every moment.
Come on, over here.
And to reconnecting through a world filled with wonder.
Wow.
Here's to supper club celebrations and dancing until the sun goes down. Here's to those who Wisconsin. Plan your summer getaway at TravelWisconsin.com.
Hey, it's WTMJ, Steve Scudi for QC Kinetics. Changed my life. I had pain in my left elbow, tennis elbow strain. I don't anymore. If you watch it on YouTube, you can see no pain and all gain because I went to QC Kinetics in Greenfield last year, five treatments over the course of about 3 months, 4 months. Dr. Ashley Caravelli and a great team, one, great medical professionals, and their treatment worked wonders on me for any joint pain, really, knees, hips, you name it. For me, it was elbow, but all that stuff. And it's regenerative. It uses your body's own healing powers, and it works so well. So I went out there for five treatments, and, you know, 5 months later, 4 months later, good as new. So if you have pain from arthritis or injuring your knees, hips, shoulders, even the stuff you love to do, like sleeping, golfing, running, because people have pain when they sleep, believe it or not. If you don't want the surgery, the meds, or long recoveries, science is real. Treatments are natural. Your body knows how to heal itself. QC Kinetics is how it works the best. No operating room, no hardware, no watching summer come and go. And we're already almost to summer, so you want to make sure you're feeling good. Here's what you got to do. Schedule a free consultation. 414-667-5559. That's 414-667-5559. QC Kinetics.
With an ever-changing inventory, you never know what great bargains you're going to be able to find at St. Vincent de Paul thrift stores. It makes shopping fun because the best finds are the ones you had no idea you'd even come across. And when they're at thrift store prices, it feels good. And it feels even better to know you're helping us help others. Shop St. Vincent de Paul thrift stores on Highway 100 in Layton and Greenfield, 23rd in Lincoln, and 76th and Bradley Road in Milwaukee.
You're gonna love it, St. Vincent de Paul. You're gonna love it, you're gonna love it all. When you shop at St. Vincent de Paul, old things, new things. Vincent's here for you.
We're always changing, we're always new.
So many friendly people, smiles from wall to wall. You're gonna love it,
St. Vincent de Paul.
You're gonna love it, St. Vincent de Paul.
Vince Vitrano for Hunt's Flooring in Greenfield. You should see what our new floors look like. And you can. But let's talk about you first. Whether you want to tighten things up before selling your house or you want to be more comfortable in your forever home, start at Hunt's Flooring. Our new hardwood floors are in. We could not be happier that we chose local, family-owned Hunt's Flooring. Text FLOOR to 855-616-1620 and I'll send you the before and after pics. Hunt's is ready for your project right now. Tell them Vinny sent you. Highway 100 in Greenfield, huntsflooring.com.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers the professional-grade products you need, delivered when and where you need them. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Get started with your no-hassle refi checkup by clicking on the blue button at Acunet.com.
All right, have you nominated your favorite first responder? I saw a lag last week, and I'm not going to take that. There's a lot of great people doing great work, but... we've got a bunch of nominations, but we can get more nominations because I know these people are doing great work every day. But I want you to tell me who's really stepped up for you, whether they save your life, save a neighbor's life, did something amazing. Tell me the stories. We do the rest. I already started making my calls, emails about some of the stories, the people I've already got, just to sort of feel them out, see what the story is, see what they did, and they're already amazing. But I want more nominees. And that period runs till the 8th, which is, what day is that, Friday?
Yeah.
Yeah, so easy, right? Text the word salute, S-A-L-U-T-E, to well, also 855, I was going to say 414, 855-616-1620. Oh, my goodness, too many numbers in my head.
You give your cell phone number out?
I almost did. Isn't that crazy? How would that have worked out? Probably not well. Anyway, give me those nominations by Friday. I'll do the rest. And then the Heroes Week in a couple of weeks, we're going to tell those stories. In studio, last half hour of the show, thanks to Waterstone Bank and all of our great partners, and I'll tell you all about them during that week, who will make this all possible. All right, you're going to have a fun story.
Well, I was going to say, would these people be eligible for salute to service if this happened?
These people being
in Wisconsin. So I saw this story. The remains of a missing South African hotel boss have been found inside a swollen 15-foot crocodile after the crocodile was airlifted in a daring operation. So would the people who got the crocodile in order to get the remains be salute to service nominees?
That'd be a stretch.
So
if they would save it, if he got swallowed whole and saved, I'm telling that story day one.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the fact that he was dead and they just cut him open for the remains.
I'm sure the family was happy they could have the remains returned.
So this was in South Africa, and there's like footage of this. I'm looking at New York Post right now.
Seriously.
And they airlift this 15-foot crocodile who's like, his belly is pretty big, and they got him out and then they sliced him open to get this guy's remains back. Honestly, if this is me, if this ever happened to me, Mike, I hope you're listening, just let the crocodile go.
Just digest you?
Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do with the remains that have been eaten by a crocodile?
I haven't, not much.
Yeah. It seems like, it's also, like, who paid for that?
I don't know.
Who paid for the emergency retrieval of
this? Well, maybe the family did, because it sounds like they had money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a crazy story.
I am not a, look, I know that all animals are sacred and precious and everything, but I'm not a fan of alligators or crocodiles.
Just because they're scary?
They just look weird, and they eat people.
How do you feel about iguanas?
I'm neutral on those.
Snakes?
Don't like snakes at all.
Sharks?
Don't like sharks. You?
I think sharks get a bad rap.
No, they don't.
I think Jaws did a disservice to sharks. And Little Mermaid. Frankie's now moved on to Little Mermaid. Big shark scene in Little Mermaid to kick off the movie. And I would say, there's actually data on this, right? As far as the poaching and killing of sharks and since Jaws went way up. And so there's less shark attacks than bunch of different things.
But if you're the person getting eaten by the shark, you don't have that same argument. When that movie came out, I don't know if there's ever been a more horrifying, terrifying movie than Jaws.
That's what I mean.
It was
scared
everything.
Out of everyone as far as what like sharks do in open waters. But speaking of vintage movies from the 70s, May the 4th be with you.
Yeah, for all those Star Wars
Are you Star Wars? Yay or nay?
Well, I like them, but I don't go out of my way.
You're not like obsessed with them.
I don't celebrate.
Are you Star Trek or Star Wars?
If you Star Trek, yeah.
Star Trek more than Star Wars. Yeah. Okay.
I'm a Kirk guy.
Captain Kirk. Okay.
Bill Shatner.
All right. Yeah. We're a Star Wars family.
Really? So you're going to have like a cake, special cake, cupcakes tonight, something like that?
Maybe Mike will be on that.
Mike will have his lightsaber.
He wishes he had a lightsaber.
Oh! All right, we got to take our last break of the Monday show. Kristen's back, as you can tell, just by the concept. There you go. Quick break. Reunited and it feels so good. Peaches and Herb on a 6:20 Monday. Other shows play music. We can play music, too.
All right, what are the things that we need to promote? What did we do for overtime this week? We missed it last week.
We are going to... You sent me the thing. What was
I sent some ideas.
Yeah.
But we'll see what's in the news. Yeah, so
we record it every Wednesday, and then we push it out.
Yeah. But we're also going to add Ask Us Anything...
At the end.
...into...
Yeah, at the end.
...our overtime podcast now. So we're moving from doing it on Wednesdays... To, we have a survey now where you can fill out your question any time of the week, and then once a week, we will answer your questions on the Overtime Podcast. So again, if you text EXTRA to 855-616-1620 and click on the most recent newsletter, the survey is in there for you to submit a question.
Yeah, so we kick around. We always spend a lot of time thinking about it. The one that I sent you, I think, was it this morning or last night? Younger women becoming way more liberal. Guys, pretty much young men staying the same.
I this is what I came back and reported after I was at the.
This one interests me.
It was that one was super interesting because this was 2 weeks ago when I was at at UW Madison. There was different pollsters and researchers who study Gen Z, and one woman in particular who runs PRRI. I asked her that. I said, which headline is more true from your polling and focus groups? Young men are moving to the left, to the right, or young women are moving to the left? She goes, young women are moving to the left. Yeah. She's like, men, it's not that they're that much more right than they were in the past. They just kind of took a chance on Trump.
You know what I think the difference is? And we can maybe we'll tee this up on Wednesday. Communication. Women communicate better, and liberal women are really effective communicators. And oh, by the way, here's this massive social media platform world where you can spread that in your cute little one-minute videos that you all love to make. That's my theory.
I've stopped sending you videos because I feel like you just immediately discredit them.
Unless it's something really interesting and the video's done, if you just have your mug, like, for example, Kate Duffy, our friend, she does it the right way. She's doing stuff. She's outside. That's interesting. If it's just your mug, I don't want to see it. I definitely don't want to hear what you have to say. Aren't you glad you're back?
It's a close, whatever. All right, we'll be back tomorrow for Talking Tuesday.